forces, electromagnetism, and the strong and weak nuclear forces have been observed to behave like light, sometimes being wave-like, sometimes particle-like. But for decades, no one could find gravitational waves or the gravity particle, already named the graviton. Therefore, the confirmation of gravitational waves in late 2015 was tremendously exciting news. Einstein's general theory of relativity had predicted such waves, amazingly enough, although no one at the time had any inkling of how they could be detected. Even with highly sophisticated modern technology, detecting gravitational waves seemed impossible because of their weakness. In simplest form, we can envision the Big Bang sending ripples through the fabric of space 13.7 billion years ago, and yet attempts to detect these waves always ran into problems. Background radiation causes interference, for one thing, which meant that pinpointing a gravitational wave would be roughly like dropping a pebble into a stormy sea and trying to single out the disturbance only it made. Then a project named Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, LIGO, was funded with the ambitious goal of building gigantic 2-kilometer measuring devices calibrated to within 1/1000th of the radius of the nucleus of an atom in order to capture the signals of gravitational waves from cosmic sources, which didn't have to be the Big Bang. Gravitational ripples could be caused, theoretically, by immense cataclysms in outer space. A few days after LIGO went into operation, in September 2015, by coincidence, the gravitational waves given off by the collision of 2 black holes 1.3 billion years ago passed through the Earth and were picked up. Such an event sends ripples through space-time traveling at the speed of light. The success of LIGO marks the beginning of a new way to measure the universe, because gravitational waves can pass through stars, revealing their core, which is hidden from sight. They may lead cosmologists back to the very early universe, providing new insights, such as the formation of black holes. But in other ways, gravitational waves are irrelevant to the larger situation that modern science finds itself in. They serve as a distraction from the unsolved mysteries that could actually shift the paradigm regarding how we see reality. For one thing, the confirmation of gravitational waves wasn't a surprise or breakthrough in terms of understanding the universe. They fulfilled a prediction that was almost a century old, and most physicists fully expected them to exist. The cosmos didn't gain a new phenomenon. Most physicists will acknowledge that there is still a rift in the story of reality. As it happens, this rift leads to a remarkable possibility. Our minds, including the stream of everyday thoughts that run through our heads, might be influencing reality out there. This could be why small things don't behave the way big things do. For example, visualize a lemon in your mind's eye. See its nubbly yellow surface and oily rind. Now see a knife cutting the lemon in half. Tiny droplets of lemon juice spritz out as the knife cuts through the lemon's pale flesh. As you did this visualization, did you find yourself salivating? That's the predictable reaction, because simply seeing the mental image of a lemon creates the same physical response as an actual lemon. This is an example of an event in here causing an event out there. The molecules that send a message from the brain to the salivary glands are no different from the molecules out there in lemons and rocks and trees. The body, after all, holds the same status as a physical object. We pull similar feats of mind over matter constantly. Every thought requires a physical change in the brain, all the way down to the activity of our genes. Microvolts of electricity fire along billions of neurons, while chemical reactions take place across the synapses, or gaps, that separate brain cells. And the pattern of these events isn't automatic. It shifts according to how you experience the world. Mind over matter upsets the apple cart of physics through this discovery, that the act of observation, mere looking, isn't passive. If you look around the room you're sitting in at this moment, the things you observe, walls, furniture, light fixtures, books, don't get altered. Your gaze seems completely passive. But as far as what's going on in here, no gaze is passive. You are altering the activity in your brain's visual cortex as your eye falls upon different objects. If you happen to see a mouse in the corner, a riot of activity may be set off in your brain. What we take for granted, however, is that seeing things is passive out there. This is where the theory of quantum mechanics caused an upset. If you move from big things to small things, observing photons, electrons, and other subatomic particles creates a mysterious phenomenon known as the observer effect. We already mentioned that photons and other elementary particles have a wave-like aspect and a particle-like aspect, but they can't have both at the same time. According to quantum theory, as long as a photon or electron isn't being observed, it acts like a wave. One feature of waves is that they spread out in all directions. There is no pinpoint location for a photon when it is in its wave-like state. Yet as soon as the photon or electron is observed, it behaves like a particle, displaying a specific location along with other features like charge and momentum. We will leave until later the specifics of complementarity and the uncertainty principle, two formulations that are critical for quantum behavior. The thing to concentrate on for now is the possibility that very tiny things out there can be altered simply through looking, which is a mental act. Common sense finds this hard to accept, because we're so used to assuming that gazing is a passive act. Go back to the mouse in the corner. When you happen to see a mouse, it often freezes and then quickly scurries away in an attempt to survive potential attack. Your gaze caused this reaction for the simple reason that the mouse sensed you looking at it. Can a photon or electron sense a scientist looking at it? The very question sounds preposterous to scientists who maintain, as the vast majority do, that mind isn't present in nature, at least not until a series of happy accidents caused human life to evolve on Earth. Nature is both random and mindless, according to a scientific credo assumed for centuries to be true. So how could a prominent contemporary physicist like Freeman Dyson say the following? Atoms in the laboratory are weird stuff, behaving like active agents rather than inert substances. They make unpredictable choices between alternative possibilities according to the laws of quantum mechanics. It appears that mind, as manifested by the capacity to make choices, is to some extent inherent in every atom. Dyson's statement is daring on two counts. He is claiming that atoms make choices, which is a sign of mind. He is also saying that the universe itself exhibits mind. In one stroke, this bridges how big things and small things behave. Instead of atoms behaving totally differently from clouds, trees, elephants, and planets, they only appear different. If you look at dust motes dancing in a beam of sunlight, their motion appears totally random, which is how the physics of bodies in motion would describe them. But another visualization helps to make the situation clearer. See yourself perched on the observation deck of the Empire State Building with a physicist next to you. You are both gazing down at the street below. At each corner, some cars turn left and others right. Is this a random pattern? Yes, the physicist replies. A statistical array can be charted to show that over a period of time, just as many cars turn right as left. In addition, no one can reliably predict if the next car coming to a corner will turn right or left. The odds are 50-50. But you know that this is a case where appearances are deceiving. Every driver inside those cars has a reason for turning right or left. Therefore, not a single turn is random at all. You just have to know the difference between choice and chance. In science, the notion of chance is so dominant that mentioning the possibility of choice, as it pertains to physical objects, verges on the absurd. Consider our own planet. All the elements that are as heavy as iron, or heavier, including many common metals and radioactive elements, like uranium and plutonium, originated in the explosion of giant stars, known as supernovas. Without such explosions, even the incredible heat inside a regular star like our Sun isn't enough to bond atoms into the heavier elements. Once a supernova explodes, these heavy elements become interstellar dust. The dust gathers into clouds, and in the case of our solar system, these clouds eventually coalesced into planets. The molten core of Earth is made of iron, but there are currents inside it that carry some of the iron close to the planet's surface. A bit of iron even leaches into the oceans and the upper layers of soil. From it, you got the iron that makes your blood red and allows you to breathe by picking up oxygen from the air. Even though the floating dust motes in a beam of sunlight are exactly like the stardust that randomly floats among the galaxies, the fate of some stardust was unique. Some dust turned into a vital aspect of life on Earth. You, a human creature, act with purpose, meaning, direction, and intention, the very opposite of randomness. How did something random become something non-random? How did meaningless dust produce the human body, which is your vehicle for pursuing everything meaningful in our lives? The answer, if Freeman Dyson is right, is mind. If mind links little things and big things, then dividing the universe into random events and non-random events misses the point. The point is that mind may be everywhere, and our lives happen to reflect this fact. A poet finds an escape route. Because Einstein is almost the symbol of a staggeringly great mind, most people don't realize that after the great triumph of general relativity, which took place when he was just in his mid-30s, Einstein bet on the wrong side of modern physics, because he couldn't accept its conclusions. When he famously said that he didn't believe that God played dice with the universe, Einstein was stating his opposition to the uncertainty and randomness of quantum behavior. He placed his lifelong faith on a unified creation that operated without rifts, tears, and separations. The notion that there is one reality and not two was something Einstein strove to prove until his death in 1955. But this quest was so far from the mainstream of physics that he was considered an incidental thinker after the 1930s. In their franker moments, even his greatest admirers shook their heads over such a great mind spending decades chasing a will-o'-the-wisp. But on one occasion, he was given a clue about how to escape the trap posed by relativity and quantum mechanics. The escape route wasn't scientific, however, but came from a poet. On July 14, 1930, reporters from around the world gathered outside Einstein's house in Kapet, a village outlying Berlin favored by the well-to-do as an escape from the hustle and bustle of the city. The occasion was a visit by Rabindranath Tagore, a great Indian poet, then at the height of his fame. Born to a prominent Bengali family in 1861, almost 20 years before Einstein, Tagore had leapt into the Western imagination by winning the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1913. He was also a philosopher and musician, someone the West viewed as an embodiment of Indian spiritual traditions. The purpose of Tagore's visit with the world's greatest scientist, as Einstein was popularly and probably rightly known, was to discuss the nature of reality. As science raised serious doubts about the religious worldview, readers felt that Tagore enjoyed an uncanny and very personal connection with the higher world. Reading even a few snippets of his writings creates the same impression today. I feel this pang inside. Is it my soul trying to break out, or the world's soul trying to break in? My mind trembles with the shimmering leaves. My heart sings with the touch of sunlight. My life is glad to be floating with all things into the blue of space and the dark of time. On that July day, as their conversation was recorded for posterity, Einstein was more than politely curious about Tagore's worldview. He recognized the appeal of an alternative reality. Einstein asked the first question: "Do you believe in the divine as isolated from the world?" Tagore's reply, delivered in flowery Indian English, was a surprise. "Not isolated. The infinite personality of man comprehends the universe. There cannot be anything that cannot be subsumed by the human personality. The truth of the universe is human truth." Tagore then set out a theme that blended science and mysticism in a metaphor. "Matter is composed of protons and electrons, with gaps between them. But matter may seem to be solid without the links and spaces which unify the individual electrons and protons. The entire universe is linked up with us, as individuals, in a similar manner. It is a human universe." In a simple phrase, the human universe, Tagore had posed the ultimate challenge to materialism. He had also undermined the cherished belief in a divine universe. Materialism would place human beings as an accidental creation that occurred on a speck of a planet awash in billions of galaxies. Religion, in its most literal interpretation, would place God's mind infinitely beyond the human mind. Tagore believed neither of these things, and Einstein immediately became engaged, as the transcript shows. Einstein: "There are two different conceptions about the nature of the universe, the world as a unity dependent on humanity, and the world as a reality independent of the human factor." Tagore renounced this either-or proposition. Tagore: "When our universe is in harmony with man, the eternal, we know it as truth. We feel it as beauty." Einstein: "This is the purely human conception of the universe." Tagore: "There can be no other conception." He wasn't spouting poetic fancy or even mystical dogma. Tagore, flowing robes and sage's long white beard notwithstanding, for 70 years had been coming to terms with the scientific view of reality, and he felt that he could counter it with something deeper and closer to the truth. Tagore: "This world is a human world. The world apart from us does not exist. It is a relative world, depending for its reality upon our consciousness."